My guest today probably has held one of the most sought-after jobs since 2008. As editor-in-chief of Hello, she's been the force behind the glossiest of magazines. She and I have worked together for many years when my event company had the challenge of organising celebrity events, and so I know the score only too well. She is one of the most delightful, dynamic individuals in the cutthroat industry, and I'm thrilled that she's agreed to be my guest today on Events That Made Me. So hello and good morning to Rosie Nixon.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Rosie.
Thanks so much for having me, Liz.
Oh, listen, thank you for joining me. And I'm hugely excited because we've worked together for a long time, but actually, I suppose we don't know each other too well. I certainly didn't know the four events that made you turn right or left. And we've shared quite a bit of Lauren Perrier Pink, I think. Simon Gregson's, I think, was one of them. Anyway, I know that you recently took on a new role as a creative brand ambassador. But before we discuss the now, I want you to share with our listeners the then. My guests give me four events that were significant to their journey in life. And the first that you shared was your trip to LA in 2006 when you were working for Glamour magazine. I mean, how glamorous.
Oh, it's such a great premise for a podcast, Liz. And it was really hard to come up with these events. So I think I've picked things that I thought would resonate with you being, you know, a leading events planner and that we would have plenty to talk about. A bit of razzle dazzle as well, which we always like. So yeah, my first experience of awards season was when I was working on Glamour magazine. My whole career has been in women's glossy titles. And awards season to me is like Christmas. I get so excited about it. I mean, it is sort of the big one in the entertainment calendar. And there isn't really one event that is bigger than the Oscars, such a kind of globally renowned event where you see true A-list superstar Hollywood royalty turning out on that red carpet to collect the big awards. So, but when I was a journalist at Glamour magazine, well, I was associate editor there, when it turned into a handbag-sized glossy mag, I often used to get sent on missions around the world in the name of investigative journalism. And this one was to go from Z-list to A-list within 48 hours to attend the Oscars. So there I was sort of in economy on the plane going out as my Z-lister self with a packed suitcase. And I then sort of had all of these beauty treatments and a complete princess makeover, borrowed a gown, borrowed some jewels that were worth millions, that had their own bodyguard, had various treatments that the stars undergo in order to get themselves glamorous and ready for the big event, and had probably about three spray tans during 24 hours. So I was a mahogany colour, had my hair done, wore this amazing gown from Alberto Ferretti and got ready for the Oscars red carpet, where a photographer was there to see me turn into the A-list version of myself that was barely recognisable as me.
I bet you felt like Cinderella, didn't you?
I did. And it was amazing, actually, because I saw the amount of effort that goes into turning the stars into these heavenly creatures that then walk the red carpet. And there are teams and teams of people behind those looks. And I've since attended the Oscars. Well, I've been out in LA 15 years because I then attended through my role at Grazia magazine and then many times at Hello, and I generally attend Elton John and David Furnish's Elton John AIDS Foundation Oscars viewing party. So they have a viewing of the awards, and then there's a big auction to raise lots of money for the Elton John AIDS Foundation. But it was kind of being witness to this world of what goes on behind the scenes that really fascinated me. One year when I worked for Grazia magazine, I shadowed Giorgio Armani, Mr. Armani, in his atelier in LA the days before the Oscars. So I saw all the big names go into this atelier, from Cate Blanchett to Clint Eastwood they all sort of went in there to have all of their suits and gowns tweaked before the big event. And there, it was a hive of activity. I mean, there were just so many Italians sort of scurrying around, making everything perfect for this seamless moment when the star is there on the red carpet.
Were you ever intimidated, Rosie, or did you, or was it sort of excitement? And the key question here is, and just between you and us, was there any celebrity that you really disliked that you came away thinking, oh my God, I am so disappointed. I used to love him or her and it's not what I thought.
Well, in answer to your first point, I'm not really intimidated. I think that is what has always appealed to me about journalism, because I just genuinely have an interest in people. And at the end of the day, everybody's a human being. And I just sort of feel I've met some of the biggest names on the planet, and I have never felt hugely intimidated. And I have to say, people often ask me who's the worst person. Nobody really is that bad when they're meeting the editor of a magazine or a journalist, because obviously they're on their A game, because they know that you're going to be writing about them and they want to give a great impression. So I haven't really come across anybody that's been terrible. I've come across huge names. And that time when I was in the atelier of Mr. Armani, Clint Eastwood arrived for his suit fitting, and it was the year that he won the Oscar for directing Million Dollar Baby. And he came and sat next to me and said, "Hi, what brings you here today?" While he was waiting, and I explained that I was a journalist for Grazia magazine and I was doing this piece trailing Mr. Armani. And he said, "That's fascinating. So tell me, what have you seen? What is the angle of your piece going to be? How are you going to write this?" And I was just having this chat with Clint Eastwood, who was just being a normal person interested in what I was doing as much as I was interested in why he was there and how he felt about the big event the following day. And later that evening, Mr. Armani often used to hold a fashion show the night before the Oscars at Ron Burkle, who's this big supermarket billionaire in the States, at his mansion in the Hollywood Hills. So I got invited to the fashion show as part of my piece. And I arrived at that with a friend of mine who I'd got in as my plus one. And we were walking up to take our seats, and Clint Eastwood suddenly came up behind me and said, "Hey, Rosie, fancy bumping into you here." My friend was like, "How come your best mates are Clint Eastwood all of a sudden?" And he was so friendly and lovely. And I think he just enjoyed the fact that we had a really normal conversation with each other, and he was interested. And often I think people in the public eye just want to be treated normally, because they are normal people at the end of the day.
Also, I think that that generation were far more personable. I think, unfortunately, the generation that we're in now, you get a lot of sort of B-list, dare I say, and even C-list celebs that have this whole deluded sense of self-importance. But, you know, the more established ones, the competent ones. And I think it's lovely that he was interested in you. Could I have his phone number?
I'm single. Not that anyone, not that I've told anyone.
I do wish that we had swapped numbers. I don't even think WhatsApp was a thing then, but I'd quite like to have him on my sort of pop up on my WhatsApp.
I'd like to have him on mine as well, yeah. So listen, so what was it that sparked the idea then for your first novel? Because what was the first novel called? I can't remember.
The Stylist. And it is set between London and LA during an awards season. And it takes in, when I sat down thinking that, you know, I'd wanted to write a novel for a long time, since I was a little girl, really. I've always been a writer. And I'd wanted to write a novel for such a long time, umming and ahhing over what I should write about. And it was a lunch I had with my agent one time, where she said, "Well, what about writing about a world that you know?" And I think I'd just got back from one of my Oscars trips. And I was so fascinated by what was going on. I felt that the role of a stylist was a bit of an untold story, because people didn't really perhaps understand the amount of work and sheer blood, sweat and tears and a lot of drama that goes on behind the scenes. And of course, dressing well in Hollywood is like an alternative economy. There are huge, very lucrative fashion contracts to be won at the end of awards season. And for those stars, it's as important to look great on the red carpet as perhaps it was to win that award for your acting career.
I think that's relevant in any industry. I know in my industry, you know, people don't see what goes on behind the scenes. They don't see the teams and teams of people that are there to build and create and create the drama. Yeah. I was reading in the paper this weekend that Joan Collins is about to be 90, and Percy had found this, I think, Alexander McQueen leather jacket or something in her wardrobe. And I thought, my God, I don't care what she's done, what she does, whether she wears a wig, whatever. She looks absolutely mega. It's just, style. I love, she looks fabulous. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the industry's crossed. Now, listen, there's two things. First of all, I'd love you to write, not a novel, but you must have loads of photographs, wonderful, wonderful photographs. You should put them on something that people can access because I think they're just gorgeous to see.
Oh, I know, and I'm very unorganised with them, I have to say. They're all on various devices and things like that, but maybe one day I will, in my dotage.
You definitely should, so that when you sat in the old age home, Rosie, you can look through them. Yes. You know, I don't even remember that.
And, you know. I know. That was that me.
Who was Clint Eastwood? The second event was life changing, and it obviously brought a whole new meaning to you for Valentine's Day. Tell us about Callum. And if my calculations are correct, it was a whirlwind because you met in 2009. And did you marry in 2009?
No. Well, we married in 2011, but he proposed twice. And I'll tell you about the first time he proposed in 2009, which was on Valentine's Day. I was out for a drink with a friend of mine, both very single at the time. We'd got our hair done that day, so we felt all sort of glammed up and that we should really make the most of this and go out for a drink and perhaps a party later on. We were out in Parsons Green, went to a bar, got chatting to this guy outside the bar who had a cheeky sparkle, little kind of twinkle in his eye, and he had a scar in the middle of his forehead. And I overheard him talking with his friends that he'd walked into a door on a photo shoot and had to go to hospital and be stitched up. And I sort of heard the word photo shoot and thought, oh, that's sort of interesting. I wonder if he works in a similar field to me. I was, at Hello at that time. Yeah, not been there that long. So sort of, you know, there was a bit of a spark there. We started talking, had a really lovely chat. And then my friend wanted to drag me off to a party that we'd been invited to. So we sort of left the pub, walked down the road to go to this party, and we're halfway down the road. And I said, God, I was really enjoying talking to that guy. He seemed really nice. The conversation flowed easily. He was funny. And we decided that I should go back and give him my phone number because I had nothing to lose, because it could be a sliding doors moment. You know, he could have been married. He could have been gay. You know, there could have been any reason why he wouldn't call me, but I had absolutely nothing to lose at that point. So wrote down my phone number, and he was sat inside the pub with his friends at this point, and sort of rather embarrassedly, with my head bowed, I sort of ran in, didn't look him in the eye, gave him my phone number and said, if he ever fancied coming for a drink, to give me a call, and literally sprinted out. And then went to this party with my friend. And later that evening, my phone rang, didn't recognise the number, picked it up, and this guy said, oh, hi, it's the guy from the pub. So I said, hello, and he said, so when are we getting married? Because this is a great story to tell at our wedding. And I said to my friend, I've just got this feeling I'm going to marry him.
I'm shivering. I've gone all cold. Oh my God, go on.
So obviously it wasn't a serious marriage proposal. And it then did take us sort of a few months actually to meet up for our first drink, because we were just toing and froing with calls and dates and things like that. But we spoke on the phone. I remember he always phoned me, which I really liked, you know, in an era where people were just texting constantly and it was hard to actually talk to anybody on the phone. He always called, and we got to know each other a bit, and we went for a drink. And actually, the day that we'd arranged to go for a drink was the day that Jade Goody sadly died. And I was on press deadline with the magazine. And so I was 2 hours late for our date because I had to finish the pages for that. But he understood. He said, that's fine. You know what? I've got tons of emails. I'm happy just sitting here having a drink. I'll wait for you. We met on the South Bank, and that was it from day one. He properly proposed 2 years later, but that was the first proposal when I just sort of knew.
How does it work? Because you lead a very dynamic, frenetic life. and you've got fingers in lots of pies. So there must be a yin and a yang, because often you find that relationships for people in the industry don't work. How does it work? And also, I want to hear it all this. Tell me about the boys. I know you've got two divine little boys. I've got two gorgeous granddaughters. So, you know, that pub moment when he said, when are we going to get married? If I sent you the pictures, you know, we might be able to hook them up here.
Yes, I know. Yeah, two gorgeous boys. And you're right with the yin and the yang, really. He's a very, very calm person, which helps balance out my sort of flightiness at times, or kind of impulsiveness, I would say. He says that I go into hyper-cluck mode, he calls it, which is I get little red spots on my cheeks when I'm kind of firing on all cylinders and need to be brought down. And he's got a very calm sort of manner. But he runs a business. He's in virtual production for films and TV. So, I mean, recently, well, we'll come on to my slight change in career was because we did reach a point where we felt that we couldn't both be going at it full steam and be the parents that we want to be to our two young boys. So one of us needed to take the foot off the gas a bit, and I was ready to do that.
It's interesting because, you know, I've been in the event business since 1986, and I've worked with lots and lots of people, lots of journalists and lots of magazines. And you are genuinely and seriously the only one that nobody has ever said a bad word about. And I really mean that, because, you know, I've worked with them all and I get on with them all. But, yeah, it was always, she's so lovely. And you are, you're a really decent human being. And it's always been a pleasure to work for you. And I think that reflects on the people that have worked for you as well. So that's not me blowing smoke up your arse.
Thanks, Liz. Well, I do believe passionately in the power of kindness, you know, and treating people with kindness. And
we're going to come on to that.
Yeah.
We're going to come on to that in a minute, because the next thing which tickled me was the wedding business, which we've done many, many of. And you referred to sort of 2010, that era, those times. And as you know, my event business, the Taylor Lynn Corporation, has survived recessions and lockdowns and challenges and competition. And I've worked closely with Hello and with OK. And these events look so glamorous, but they are run with such military precision that the celebrity faces pale into insignificance when you're ensuring that the paparazzi don't get the sneak shot and the magazine photo list is done and dusted in time. And I soon learned to get this off to a fine art and became great mates with the contributors and the photographers. And I've made lifelong friendships. And the event that you shared with me was Eamon and Ruth's wedding, which we had a lot of fun with. Why do you think that was significant to you? What was it about that wedding that made you make it an event that made you?
Well, I think you've touched on it there, that this was an incredible era of showbiz weddings and the relationships with the talent and all of the teams and the wedding planners and everybody involved with a magazine brand. And it was a fantastic time to be editing Hello, because you're almost like this custodian, sort of guardian of these very personal relationships with the talent, where work crossed over into personal life. Because this is a wedding, you know, it's not a photo shoot. It's somebody's genuine big day. And with that comes a huge amount of responsibility as an editor to convey it in a way that's authentic to the couple and is genuine, and but also ensuring that you get the exclusive that you need, because we would have come to an agreement that this is going to be on the cover of the magazine and we don't want paps or anybody else spoiling the day and turning it into a complete mess for the talent and for everybody concerned. So all of these measures would be in place. And I remember doing recce of the venue together, where we'd look at possible angles by which a paparazzi might be able to steal an image of the couple, or see Ruth in her dress and should she wear a cloak to go in or not. I mean, it was kind of before social media had taken off in such a big way as well. So celebrities needed that relationship with a media partner to show their fan base, you know, what they were doing in a way that they now, many of them do on their own Instagram channels or their own social media platforms. So that didn't really exist. So it was a real hand-in-hand approach. And I think Eamon and Ruth's wedding, as well as being obviously completely spectacular, which you and your own team ensured that it was, Liz, and that it ran beautifully, and you were a complete dream to work with as well. We had so much fun on that wedding. It really felt that they embraced the Hello team and we were kind of all in it together. And I remember Eamon actually coming back into our sort of behind the scenes area a few times to get a little bit of a break to sort of just chill out from, because it's pretty full on being the groom on your wedding day with all these people. And he'd come back and say, oh, it's so peaceful back here.
Do you remember Christopher Biggins coming on as Susan Boyle?
I do.
That was so funny.
He was just brilliant. I mean, he did it. He looked the double of her. The thing, yeah. I've stayed great friends with Ruth and Eamon. I mean, I've stayed
and
friends
me too. With all it's of them. It's solidified a friendship.
Yeah, definitely. And what I loved about him, and it was the very first thing, when we very first went to Elvetham to have a look at the venue, there was a lady hoovering in the hallway. And he stopped and he said, how do you do? Good morning. And what's your name? And she said, my name's Anne and what have you. And then we went in and we had the first meeting. The next time we went back to Elvetham, this lady was still hoovering in the hallway. And he walked up to her and he went, hello, Anne. How are you? It's nice to see you again. And that, to me, that stuck with me forever because he has that ability to make you feel that you are the most important person in the room. I'm not sure Ruth would agree, but I think we all agree.
I love the two of them are such fun. The dynamic between them is brilliant. And I remember they invited the Hello team to join them. They had like a family barbecue the night before the wedding. And it was glorious weather and we were all outside. And, you know, Eamon sort of called me over and was introducing me to auntie, whoever, and, you know, various family members. And it just felt so lovely and special that we are all part of the team with the same goal. You know, we're not here as journalists that are trying to scoop and get an inside story. We're working hand in hand. I think that's something that I've been really proud and protective of with Hello and our philosophy that is to produce trusted content that is kind and that we work hand in hand with the stars that we feature.
Hello always had a slightly more sophisticated clientele than OK. They'll never work with me again now, but not in any way derogatory, but they were very, very different brands.
Yeah, they were very different.
Very different. They are very different brands. Is there one that you wish that you hadn't done or one that went tits up where you were not able to publish it?
Well, no, none that we've done that we've not been able to publish. And I think there's not a one size fits all. Like every single wedding has been completely different, as every wedding that you attend is. You know, everybody has their own ideas of how it is going to work and look and how their relationship will be with the media company too. And obviously now there are a lot more kind of things in place over video content is so essential to us. And there's a plan around how we will release on social media, you know, teasers and images sort of. So it's a bigger sort of multi-platform operation now. But everyone has been amazing. I mean, Robbie Williams's wedding always stands out to me because that was completely secret. It was only me and his manager and the couple that knew they were getting married, not even any of their family. They thought they'd been flown out to LA for a family party. And I was there interviewing Robbie and Ida in their bedroom the night before the wedding while it was being set up in the grounds of their house beneath us. And that was really amazing. And every wedding is different and it's just a complete privilege. We did the Clooney's wedding, George Clooney and Amal's wedding in Venice. And I've become great friends with Amal's mother through the course of that wedding. And we're still in touch and we meet up for lunch. And she's wonderful because we've shared a very precious time together and they're grateful for the way the relationship has unfolded.
It's funny because I met Robbie and Ida and it's all in the book Tailor Made, which I'll plug here. But I became friends with her mother. We met over a Goyard handbag and became very friendly, but it's moved on now. But this, I can share this with you now because this podcast will be out after it's happened. But in 2 weeks' time, I'm doing in inverted commas, 30th birthday party for a client. I did her 18th and I did her brother's and I've worked for the mother. And they're a very affluent family. They live in Cheshire. And everyone's been invited to the 30th. And when they get there, they come into the drinks reception. They'll have a glass of pink champagne. And then the wall is going to drop and the whole thing is set up for a wedding.
Oh, and nobody knows wow. my virtual wedding. And it is. And I am.
Oh, my God, Liz, you can tell me who that is after this call.
I'm so excited. You wouldn't know them. They're just a very, very yeah. unassuming, exceptionally right. wealthy family that trusted me with
that. That must be like the ultimate. Do you just absolutely love occasions well, like that? I mean, they're stressful, I bet, too.
No, it's not that, because I've got an amazing team that I've worked with forever. But it has, you know, the mornings you wake up and you think, I can't do this anymore. I've had enough. I want to do something else. Mm. And then something like that comes in and you think, actually, this is why I'm doing it.
Yes.
And we're flying in 20 musicians from Paris and we've got 5 violinists that are going to walk. I mean, I'm crying as I'm telling you the story.
Wow.
It's going to be really mega. So I'm off up there this afternoon after this podcast.
Oh, how amazing.
But it is. It's great. So, yeah, it's the drama and the surprise and the creativity.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Do you have any pinch me moments from your climb up the ladder? And you have climbed up the ladder. You're very, you know, you're very, very unassuming. Do you have any pinch me moments?
I think publishing my books have been personally real pinch me moments, because there's no cutting corners with writing a novel. It is sheer hard work and a lot of focus. And I think as I have sort of climbed up the ladder and become an editor, you become further, more and more removed from the writing on the title. And that was what always drew me to journalism initially. It's storytelling. It's telling somebody's story. And I'm very lucky to do that in the environment of Hello, where you build a relationship with them. So they open up to you about areas of their life that they might not have ever opened up about before. And you provide the long form version that social media just can't do. So there's still very much a place for this type of journalism. But obviously I've been doing less and less of it. So having my novel writing is a real passion of mine. And I absolutely love it. Getting lost in that world with your characters is an amazing place to be. So I think every time I've published a book or held that copy of the first edition when it comes through in a box from HarperCollins and you open it and it's there, it's really a pinch me moment that never ever gets old, because you've put so much into it. I mean, I'm at the beginning of writing my fourth novel at the moment, and I'm at the very nerve-wracking stage where I've only written 12,000 words and I need to have 90,000 words by the end of the year, and I'm full of self-doubt and can I do it again, and trying to find the time for it. But I've done it before. I keep reminding myself and I'll get into it.
Where did you get the inspiration for the books from?
Well, this series, this is the third book I'm writing in the Stylist series, is very much set in the world that I know, which is this sort of celebrity world. So Amber Green, who's my central character, is a stylist. And in this book, she's going to become a personal stylist to a big star. And she's going to end up moving in with her to be on call for this show that this star is recording. So it's similar but different, and it's comedy, it's lighthearted. I chuckle away to myself as I'm writing. It amuses me, so I have to amuse somebody else.
Are they on audio?
They are, yes, yeah.
Oh, right, okay, I'm going to listen then.
Yeah, no, I think you might enjoy it. Yeah, good little holiday read or listen.
The last event was the Hello Inspiration Awards last year. Why did this have such an impact on you? What changed?
Well, the Inspiration Awards have been something that's sort of been my baby at Hello since we first launched them in a form. They were actually called the Star Women Awards before we evolved them into the Inspiration Awards. And it's where we get a chance to put the spotlight on some real superstars of the day, some of which are in the public eye and some of which are not, are normal people who've done extraordinary things. And they really are the heart and soul of our brand, because we celebrate people for doing something particularly courageous, or for using their platform for good in some manner, or for changing the lives of others in their local community. We have a kindness award that we give. And they are just see the great and the good and all walks of life come together under one roof to celebrate. And it's always a really moving event. There's lots of tears at it. And for me this year, I'd been starting to feel that I'd been at Hello for 15 years in this role, this busy sort of, you know, treadmill of getting a magazine out every week. But also as a media brand, we've changed and evolved. And there are lots of additions now. You know, I host a podcast. We have lots more events. We work on campaigns and partnerships with brands. So the role had sort of got bigger and bigger. And I was running on empty, really. And the awards went brilliantly. And I had been starting to feel that this area of purpose and empowerment and how we lift up our audience and we show inspirational stories to them that help inspire them, but also support them through more difficult times in life, show that it is possible to get through that. And here are the tools, and here is how other people have done it in a way that might inspire you. We also launched a campaign called the Menopause Workplace Pledge last year that I was very involved with, about supporting women going through the perimenopause and menopause. And I was finding all of this so fulfilling that it was sort of a watershed moment for me after these awards. I thought, that's what I want to do. I just want to do that. I need to feel that I have a strong purpose in helping to make the world a bit better if I can in some way. And I can do that at Hello through creating content that will have a social impact, that will have a strong purpose to support and empower our audience. So I, you know, after a number of weeks of mulling all of this over, I went and chatted to my boss about me taking on a 3-day-a-week role at Hello as our creative brand ambassador, where I will work solely on this purpose area. So I've said goodbye to the magazine team, which was obviously a big wrench, although I'm still involved in exclusives and obviously using my network and contacts to bring exclusives to our platforms. But we're really thinking brand first now and putting purpose to the fore to say, yeah, this is really important to us, that we're there for our audience in a deeper way.
And so for the listeners, so that they understand, online and in copy, is it now a completely separate section that is dedicated? You know, like you go in the Daily Mail and you've got health and fitness, the thing that they insert. Is that how it's going to be shared?
No, it almost is a thread that runs through. So, for example, the menopause campaign, you know, our heartland at Hello is sort of midlife women, although we do say we're read by everyone from 18 to age 80. We have a core sort of reader age, which is probably 35 to 55. And all of the purpose content will run through everything we do, really. So all of the menopause content ran in print, it ran online, and we actually created a menopause hub on the website where you can find trusted information, because it's really important that we're credible in the way that we support our audience. And we have great access to experts in their fields, as well as celebrities and people that want to share their experience. And I think, as such a big media brand, if we can smash a few taboos, if we can put proper, genuine information out there that people can trust, then that is, you know, doing a really important part of our role as a media company. It shows that we care.
Is it focused on women?
Our core audience probably is women, but obviously those women have husbands or partners or brothers or fathers, and they all need to be part of that conversation too. You know, this isn't a women versus men thing. We're all in it together. So no, so it will involve men folk as well.
And tell me about the book, because you've written the book, haven't you?
Be kind. Yeah. Again, that was...
I'm struggling with that.
Really? What, to be kind?
No, I've had 5 years therapy. I'm much kinder than I was.
Oh, really? Well, you know, Liz, kindness is a choice in any... It's not... It is a learned behaviour. When we're born, we're not born with empathy, which is why we teach kindness in our children. I say to my boys all the time, just stop for a moment if they're bickering or whatever. And what you're going to do, just stop and think. So you've got a choice now of how you're going to act. And they say, be kind, mummy. But that kindness has to start with ourselves and how we talk to ourselves and show compassion towards ourselves. Otherwise, we won't have that ability to be kind to others.
So is the book a manual?
No, it's a book full of quotes and tips and pearls of wisdom from some famous personalities. I mean, I asked a few people and then lots of people wanted to get involved with it. It was kind of my lockdown baby, the Be Kind book. So lots of famous personalities contributed to it. Also experts on ways that you could bring a little more kindness into your life and what it means to be kind.
It's interesting because, as most will know, I went through a very, very acrimonious divorce, which sparked me to write my book. Mm. But I had 5 years of therapy with the most wonderful woman who I'm still in touch with. Mm-hmm. And when I went, sort of coming towards the end of it, I was in the office and my PA, who'd been with me for 15 years then, she looked at me and she said, "You're not angry anymore. You're much kinder." Wow. And I think you don't realise how your personal circumstances and everything around you affect your well-being. You think that you're in control of it all. Totally. But, you know, just to say please and to say thank you and to be kind to yourself. That's the hardest.
The great thing about kindness is that, you know, when you do something kind for somebody else, it makes you feel great too. You know, it's like a win-win situation. And then it's proven that if you're kind to somebody, they're then likely to go out and be kind to other people. And before you know it, there's a snowball effect. And it does make a difference. It's something so simple that doesn't cost anything, doesn't care how much money you've got, it doesn't care where you're from or what you do. It costs nothing to be kind. So we've always got that as a tool in our back pocket in any given situation.
I think we all need a little bit of Rosie Nixon in our life. So we've got to read all the fiction, because I bet the fiction's got lots of little hidden tips
juicy
in it.
Juicy gossip.
We like juicy gossip. And I think we also need to hook onto this Be Kind. I think they're really exciting times for you. And I've absolutely loved chatting to you. And I can't thank you enough for doing this for me. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Liz. I've loved it too.
If you've enjoyed this series of Events That Made Me, make sure you've given the podcast a 5-star rating wherever you're listening. And follow me on Instagram at Liz Taylor Consultancy. Check out my website, liz-taylor-consulting.co.uk. And read the book, Tailor Made, available on Amazon.